Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Passports, Please. Conversations about the power of place, the places that change us, and why it matters. And we are your hosts, Dr. Chick Morgan, the Cowgirl PhD Diva, and
Rodney Burseal,
the multi-international award-winning photographer, and as I like to call him, photographer-in-chief in our studio here. We want to welcome you to another episode in Season 1, our inaugural season, focusing on Africa. And at why Africa? I guess we could say because there's so much of it and it's there. And this was really the initiative for Rodney and I launching this podcast. And we are so happy to have back with us today after a rousing episode last time, Mr. Rick Menchu from Wimberley, Texas also, and Rodney's travel and photography partner in the five-week immersion into Africa that they had about 6 months ago. So when we left, oh, it was quite a breathtaking episode. I mean, my head's still torquing like the, you know, the Exorcist kind of thing spinning around. But we heard about what we laughingly but seriously call the incident, mm-hmm. which was just a scene and a vocalization of which gave rise to my visualization of just sheer and utter chaos when you entered into the country of Ethiopia. Now, there are a lot more countries that we're going to be talking about, Rodney and I are going to be talking about in the future, but for last week and today, it's around Ethiopia, which is why one of the reasons we invited Rick, just because he's also just a wonderful raconteur. And there was, when we last we left, I think there was some reference to a hippo, and we had to cut it off there because we wanted to give the hippo its due. So, Rodney, why don't you get us rolling on this episode today, and let's start with a hippo, and then you're going to take us on a journey of some of the wonderful, fascinating, deeply rich tribes that you all visited.
Yeah, I think we were recollecting the whole our travel journey, getting down to our first tribe, and it was, you know, we had talked about, you know, the things that we were avoiding and hitting and not hitting. it was after our first traumatic experience that we had gone back to the hotel and recollected and decided that we were going to continue with this. And we left about 4 a.m. and we're in this mountainous area, wooded area. And the sun was just starting to come up. And we're coming around this turn, and it was another one of those moments where the driver swerves.
And like, you thought, oh, no, not again, huh?
What, you know, are we about to hit another person? And look up, and there's a hippo. And, you know, we're still half asleep, and it's dark. And I asked the guide, I said, well, did I just see a hippo? And I, you know, because you associate hippos with being in the water and which, you know, they actually are very much, you know, land animals. But they, I was having that moment. And he's like, yeah, I said, that was a hippo. And, and this is an area that's very populated. And there's thousands of people walking up and down the road.
In the middle.
And
of,
one hippo, apparently.
Yeah.
At least.
Walking to work. Or...
Yeah, so I asked him, I said, you know, so what happens when you come across a hippo in the middle of the road?
And that sounds like the opening line to a joke or something,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he looks back at me and he says, well, you go to heaven. And
wow.
I was like, all right.
Well, Rick, what kind of rap do hippos have? Why was this even a concern?
Well, I mean, they're actually is considered to be the most dangerous animal on the planet. They've got a huge temper. I think more people in Africa get killed than any other animal mm-hmm. out there.
Yeah, and they're vegetarians. Yeah, they're not even meat eaters, and they the giant tusks.
Then what's the appeal?
Yeah, they're those giant teeth that they have. They're strictly for killing. They're not pleasant animals to be around on any regard, especially if you've seen them in their pools. they're actually quite disgusting creatures.
Wow, I was just looking at a catalog that showed little garden hippos, all smiling, wearing a little swim cap, you know. Thinking, well, I guess that's not the real thing, is it?
But like everything, the babies are so freaking cute.
Yeah.
But
nature's trick, isn't it?
Yeah.
The baby's cute.
Yeah.
So you got a real welcome to Ethiopia between the incident where you very unfortunately struck a man who, I'm happy to say, afterwards I asked, you know, I guess when we were talking last time, do you know what happened? And fortunately the man survived. Fortunately for a lot of reasons, probably.
For many reasons, yeah.
Most of all him.
Mostly him, but yeah, now that he's okay, we were able to continue on and...
And you dodge the hippo.
And actually get back home.
You dodge the hippo at the crack of dawn. So now are you finally on to the raison d'etre for your being in Ethiopia, which were the tribes?
I think, like I said, you know, between the hippo and the dogs and the donkeys, and, you know, I'm sure there were many instances that we could go into detail, but we've probably covered enough of that. We can go on and get us to our first village.
Is there a picture by chance on your Instagram or your website? You didn't have to get the hippo, did you?
No, and that's, you know,
it happened so quick.
And I've got so many of those regrets, and like we talked about last time about Tim, you know, regretting not
the massive elephant
when the night we was like we knew where he was, and it was like, well, let's just go in the morning because it's gonna, by the time we get there, we'll have 5 minutes. It's gonna be too dark. And you know, that was that moment where, because the next day we missed him. So I've had so many of those moments, and you would think I would have learned my lesson. But the hippo, I don't know, why didn't we stop our guide and, you know, can we go back and get a photo?
It was still pretty dark.
But, you know, we've got high ISOs that work in these cameras now. So. to at least something to document it. But I think we were just in such shock going, that was a hippo. And in an area where we didn't expect to see it. But
and they were in a hurry to get to the Suri tribe because it was about a 9 to 10 hour journey. And we started at 4 a.m, didn't get to the tribe till what, maybe about 2 that afternoon?
Yeah, I think so.
So I know you experienced quite a few tribes in Ethiopia, which was one of the high points or one of the real reasons going over there in addition to the animals. But why don't you tell us about a few that stick out in your mind or come to mind or for whatever reason and take us on that journey?
Well, I think we'll start with the Suri. Mm-hmm. That was the first one and by far the craziest experience of all of them.
They're considered to be the least, they're the most remote of the Omo Valley tribes. They're really close to the South Sudan border. They're the least visited, but also considered the most ornate. Many of the women have both lip and ear plates. And we'll get into that a little bit more in a minute. But that was one of the main tribes that was really important for us to see and photograph.
Yeah, they're... I guess we can go on and start, you know, talking about the visuals, you know,
One of the things that right after the hippo that really surprised me was how beautiful it was. And when I researched Ethiopia, the northern part, which is the Simien Mountains, is like stunningly beautiful, where they've got these ancient old churches. But when it started getting daylight after the hippo, we were up in the mountains passing tea plantations and coffee plantations, and we were up in the clouds.
The landscapes were gorgeous.
It was beautiful,
there.
Yeah. But it was an interesting drive down there.
So,
can I ask before you get into the specifics, how were you able to gain access to photograph these tribes? Seems like that would be pretty tricky.
Well, this guy that we had hired, he was Bana, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, and he went to university and spoke several languages, and he spoke better English than we did, which was a huge windfall.
He actually started working for he was working for another guide for several years, and then decided to start his own. And Rick and I, you know, we've talked about this, and he was a great guy. And what he was able to get us into, he wasn't much. I guess what I would have really loved from him is he, you know, you had to question anything you needed to know.
Fish information.
Yeah, you were constantly having to ask questions. He wasn't feeding it to you, but he got us into some of the most amazing experiences just because of his, you know, his knowledge and living there and being a part of these different tribes. And it just, he's made these amazing connections, and he knows all of the chief elders of all these tribes that we're going to visit. And
so the guides are always the intermediaries.
Yes.
For yeah. the photography.
And okay. we knew going into this that the Elmo Valley is really not visited that much. I mean, it's very much the road less traveled. Many people have no idea that this exists, but it has been visited enough to where many of the tribes, you know, expect to be paid or tipped for taking the photograph. And one of the reasons we picked this guy was that he paid the villages, took care of that for you, so we weren't constantly having to tip each person we photographed. He would tip the elder of the tribe, so the whole tribe benefited from the payment instead of just the people we were photographing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and that was the other beauty of this guy, was that there were a lot of other guides that didn't do. They literally just got you there, and you're negotiating every time you take a picture. They want it, you know. They want money, and he got it all set up where, you know, we'd get there, we'd go in, he'd go talk to the elder. I assume they were negotiating a price. I don't know what that, you know, that actual conversation was, and we just sit there for a few minutes, just kind of looking around, and then finally he come over and he's like, "All right, you're free to go." And we just walk around, and people would let us take their photos. And you know, occasionally you'd get the one that wasn't too crazy about it, and they'd go and, you know, hide their face, and mm-hmm. so you just, you know, you respect that. And
well, how did you all approach how you wanted to photograph or what you wanted to photograph? Did you have any plan, or did you
I didn't. I don't know if Rick, I mean, I'm probably speaking for both of us, because I don't think we knew really what we were getting into. And that's why I want to go back, because now that we've experienced it, I know what we can and can't do, and I got, you know, a better idea of what I would like to photograph. But yeah, you don't know what their what their reaction is going to be, and I didn't realize how much freedom we really did have at first. And then once I got comfortable with that, it's like the Surrey. I kind of wish we had done them later, because it was one of the better ones to photograph, but it was trial by fire. You know, you're just thrown in and you just start shooting. And but they, you know, they would come up and they would pose and overdo their headdresses just because they wanted their pictures taken. And then, of course, there were the ones that didn't. But yeah, it's.
So what would you do differently? And Rick, this is a question for you too, in terms of what you know now.
We were originally supposed to have spent 3 days with the Surrey tribe, and I think see different villages. And because of the weather conditions, and of course the incident of hitting the elderly man and having to go back, we got to spend really just a day and a half with them. And when we were researching it, we found out that there were several tribal ceremonies that we had read about, and Roddy and I talked about it, and it was something that we would have loved to have seen if that was going on. And we got very, very lucky with
extremely lucky
with seeing two different ceremonies from two different tribes. And the big one was the Surrey tribe, that, you know, the first one, that they have this stick fighting ceremony, I think, what, once a year?
Yeah, and this, again, in Rick's extensive research, this is one of the things that he sent me. He said, "I doubt we'll get to see this, but, you know, this is pretty amazing." And it's, yeah, you know, it's the stick fighting. And sure enough, we pull into the Surrey tribe on day one. And that other tourist group that was...
We saw at the airport.
That we saw at the airport ended up in this village. But we pulled in at the same time. And then...
They weren't there.
they disappeared off somewhere else, and somehow we got exclusive to this stick fight. Mm. And when you say stick fight, it's exactly what...
It's pretty brutal. Yeah, it's
when you have photographs on your Instagram page, right? Yeah. That's Rodney Brusseel Instagram, if you want to see some of these incredible photographs of this.
Yeah, and I don't... Have you posted any of yours yet?
Yeah, I've got some of mine as well.
Oh, and your Instagram is Rick Minchew?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. M-I-N-C-H-E-W.
Correct.
Okay.
So... Yeah, it's...
It's basically a rite of passage where all these Suri villages, we were told there's about 120 Suri villages and in this one area close to the South Sudan border. And many of these villages will come together, and these men, it's a rite of passage. They're proving their worthiness to get married. And they beat the hell out of each other with these sticks.
Yeah, the sticks are about, 9 feet long?
Yeah.
And they're about, like a small bamboo pole. And
the winner of these stick fights get to choose the single woman of their choice in the village as a wife. And
the women are lined up.
Yeah.
Hoping that they get chosen. It sounds very, I'm going to say primitive, but because it is. But it's for us to hear the stories or what we witnessed, you're going, oh my God, how could they do this? But that's just their way of life, and they love it. It's the women, I guess you compare it to sports heroes,
almost
here,
like cheering on their football player boyfriend is almost kind of what it reminded me.
Yeah, the crazy thing with these fights is when you're there. There were probably 15 or 20 of the different tribes or the villages that come together for these fights, and they've each got their flag, and they would stick it in the ground as a challenge. So the next, that tribe would come up and stick their flag in, and they would circle around. And then there are very strict rules to this. It's like us watching rugby going, hey, okay, I can see there's a game here, but I don't understand the rules. And that's what this was. Yeah. And there were times when it would get so chaotic, the crowd just going nuts, and is because somebody broke a rule. And then the crowd would start going crazy, and then the elders would start firing off their AK-47s to calm the crowd down. And you're just going,
you're ducking, and, and it was pretty unnerving too.
It was.
Is this something that happens only at a certain time of year, and you all just lucked into it?
Totally, it happens like once a year.
Yeah.
And it's after the harvest, isn't it?
Yeah. Our guide told us that he's had his tour company for 6 years, and that we were the third actually have gotten to see one of these in 6 years he's been doing this.
See, I believe that was your karmic reward for going through what you had gone through.
It was really interesting. All these different villages that came to this one spot for the stick fighting ceremony, they would come down the road, this dirt road, strutting like peacocks, chanting and dancing, and the warriors are naked. They're completely
naked.
Yeah, and some of them have like some knitted knee pads or something to help soften the blows. But they're all butt naked and strutting down this road like peacocks, chanting and
they're literally dancing and they have their sticks and their guns and their flags, and they're just it's a visual thing. Yeah, it's you've got to see this.
Would you call that the high point of your day and a half with the Suris?
It was certainly one of them, but there was the next day was pretty cool too.
It's a completely different, but just as
the when these villages were strutting in like peacocks. I guess the winner of the previous year's fight for that village had these big beads that they would hold up like a trophy that they would award the winner,
thousands and thousands of beads. Yeah. They're just,
and there was like 3 to 4 stick fights going on at the same time, and they were constantly moving, and the crowds would move with the stick fighting, and the elder of the village stayed with me and Rodney the entire time we were there. And we were just taking pictures like crazy, and everything was just amazingly interesting. And all of a sudden, he would grab us by the shirt collar and yank us back and motion for us to run so we're not getting run over by this mob of people. And because, yeah, we couldn't see everything because there was 3 to 4 fights going on at the same time.
Yeah, and it's so funny because you'd be in these circles and you're when you've got a camera in front of your face, you're not aware of your surroundings. Yeah. And there would be so many times where, you don't realize how close they're getting, and then you start hearing the whiff of the stick going over your head, and then you drop your camera and you look up, and then there's all these butts in your face, and
I did want to move us along. because I really do hope you go on the photographer's sites for these photographs, but I really do want to be able to touch on a couple of other tribes that you visited. So can you take us on that journey? And
We left the Surrey, and where did we?
We left the Surrey, and because of the situation from the incident, we drove back. We got to photograph the Surrey the second day and see them painted up by a river, which was interesting. But then we drove back to Jemma, the airport we flew into, and then had to fly back to Addis Ababa, where we spent the night, and then flew to an airport called Jinka.
This is all in Ethiopia?
Yeah, which is on the southern part of that.
Lots of airports.
And our guide had another driver pick us up there, and it was a huge difference this mountain range made. It wasn't near the white knuckle driving.
And he was a much better driver.
And the people were a lot friendlier as well.
Yeah, huge difference.
And we were driving to the southern part of the Omo Valley, and we came across the Stick Boys of the Banna tribe.
Yeah, and in fact, I guess I saw photos of them before we left, and I didn't realize it, but our guide was Banna, and this is the one. They're the young boys. It's part of their ritual. They make these stilts, and they walk around on it. It's really, I guess, just for entertainment value now.
And they're painted with white. Their faces and bodies are painted with white chalk. And
we had asked Fitzum and said, "Are we going to see the Banna?" He said, "Yeah, we'll probably see him." And I think it was an hour later, we're driving down the road, and they're blocking the road. And I'm just like, "Oh my God, there they are!"
There's about 10 of them.
So I asked, if he had set that up, or if they're always here. And he goes, "Well," he said, "when you said you wanted to see him, I called and
gave him
had him come meet us out on the road." And
Rodney's got some amazing photographs. He's in a circle around him. He's laying on his back on the highway.
They were so much fun. They loved to interact, and we could direct them. And so I've got one photo where I'm laying on the road shooting up at them, and I've got them just circled around me, and they were having a blast. In fact, there was the one kid that he had painted on his chest. Omo, what did it say? It said Omo. He had like 3 words written on his chest, and all the other kids didn't. And I'd asked Fitzum about that, and he said, he's just showing off because he's educated. Mm. He's learned how to read and write, and so that was his way of, letting you know that I have an education. Mm-hmm. It was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the high, we were there probably 30 minutes, but it was one of my favorite moments.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
And great photographs. So.
His photographs are amazing.
Did you get some too, Rick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mine don't hold a candle to Rodney's, but.
Well, he is a professional and we don't try this at home. So yeah,
that's true.
But, what was it? Where did we go after that?
So after that, we got down to it was all dirt. We got to a point where it was all dirt roads, and we ran into the kids with the camels. And
they were still Banna, weren't they?
They might have been.
I think they were. Yeah.
And we went to a village called Termi, where we were going to stay the night. We were originally supposed to have tent camp 7 of the 9 nights we were there, and because of the heavy rains and the mud, it wasn't conditions to camp in. So he told us that he was putting us up in a lodge, which was very basic, and we knew it was going to be. And
lodge is a loose term.
It was a bed and a shower.
a bed bug in a shower.
Yeah, Rodney had an incident with bed bugs the first night.
See, I always think of Out of Africa and, you know, Robert Redford, those kind of camps, but I guess they're not everywhere. Well, right?
Well, we had some of those in
Tanzania and Kenya,
but not in Ethiopia.
It's pretty basic. But yeah, so it was dark when we pulled into the lodge because we couldn't see a whole lot from it.
And yeah, I don't remember that.
Checked into the room and they were going to close the restaurant, so we immediately went to dinner and got up early the next morning. And I think we were going to try to see the Hammer Tribe, but they'd had heavy rains, yeah. And the river was flooded, so we couldn't
cross.
We went to the Cairo after we got to the southern part.
No, the Abore was the one that we couldn't get to because of the flood.
That was it.
But the hammer is the most, they're the largest tribe there. And yeah, you see them everywhere.
Yeah.
And
how would I recognize one?
The women have short looking dreadlocks and they're covered with this clay and butter. So they're red. I mean, their hair is this red.
Yeah, clay. It's the most distinct looking tribe. I mean, when you see them, it's like Hammer. Oh, they're Hammer, and it's odd. Even their facial structure, like all the women, literally looked almost exactly the same because they had just, you know, like us. You know, we all have very distinct, you know, different features. It's like their jawlines, and they look all exactly the same, and the same, you know, of course, the same exact hair, and it's a strange.
Do you know by any chance whether that's part of a cultural orientation, that's a value that they hold, or?
Yeah, well, obviously the hair is, but you know, as far as their, you know, their physical appearance, I don't know. I don't think we ever talked to anybody.
Right.
We'll have to make a note of that because it would be, you know, be interesting if that was a value of not trying to stand out or not looking different. Mm-hmm.
The hair, like I said, you know, Rick was saying, it's all clay and butter, how they style this. And so when it's hot, you know, it's just all the stuff's running down their neck. And I don't know how they do it. They had a very distinct, you know, wardrobe too.
Yeah.
You know, it was all, in fact, we actually got to bring some back home, but they're beaded goat skins and they all have the women that are married. All right. You can probably describe
they've got an iron collar. It's like a necklace, but it's so tight. It's like they call it a collar.
Yeah, I don't know how they get it on.
And it's iron, but it's silver in color. So I guess it's been painted, and some of it has markings on it. And then to be and they can take multiple wives. The Hammer people, most of the tribes can. And to be a first wife is a big, big honor. And they've got a second huge collar above their wedding collar, showing that they're a first wife. And they've got this great big knot that sticks out of the collar.
Yeah, and both of these, yeah, they're so tight. It's like
how can they breathe?
They must bend it back around their necks to get them on because there's no way it doesn't go over the head. But yeah, the Hammer had many distinct characteristics that, you know, when you saw them, the thing that's interesting too is there are some other photographers that I've started following, and I didn't realize it until now. But when I see photos, I immediately know who they are now because they all do have very distinct, you know, different, you know, beads the way they make them. You know, like the Desenich had that very distinct red and yellow, and then the Caro had that blue and red, and the Hammer was more of the green colors. And yeah, it's really interesting how different they all are. And
so how did you, what difference did you notice in terms of the photographs you took of the Siri? Of course, they were the stick people, right?
The stick fighting.
That's pretty specific. But the photographs, as you went from tribe to tribe, did they take on their own experience, their own difference?
Yeah, it's all different. You know, they all had different face paintings. And even the Suri, like during the stick fighting, they weren't as ornate for that. But then the next day when we got to go hang out in the village and just, you know, do portraits, and they got into, you know, very distinct face painting, and they would decorate their heads with, you know, flowers and greenery and
they use nature. They use nature a lot.
Yeah. And a lot of that, you know, was, I don't remember if that was if there was a purpose for that, or if it was just for the purpose of, you know, us putting on makeup for photos.
What I didn't think about this beforehand, but what really surprised me was that they paint each other. This is pretty much a mirrorless society. All the tribes were, and that they very much wanted to see the picture in the back of your camera after you took it.
In fact, I guess it was the Suri when we were down by the river, and all the kids, they were mixing clay on the rocks, and then they had sticks and they were painting each other's face. And that's, you know, our guide had told us that, you know, they can't see themselves, so they have to do each other's makeup. But there was one kid that had an old compact, you know, with all cracked mirror, and you know, he's trying to do his own makeup. And there was that, the one day, in fact, I think it was the last day when we were coming back to camp, and there were six hammer girls walking down the road, and we stopped to take their photos and, you know, talk to them. And they kept looking. I thought they were looking in the back of the truck, and they were looking
in the side mirrors.
And they kept laughing. And I asked, you know, I asked our guy, I said, what are they laughing at? And they said, they're looking at their reflection because they, you know, hadn't seen themselves. They didn't know what they looked like. So, yeah, it was a eye opener to
something we don't even think about, take for granted.
The Hammer Tribe has a ceremony that we lucked into seeing as well, called a bull jumping ceremony.
Bull
jumping, and it's the same thing as a Suri. It's basically their rite of passage to prove themselves worthy of being married, and the all the marriages for just about all of the tribes are pre-arranged marriages by their parents, and they're arranged when the kids are 3 to 5 years old. And the Hammer Tribe, they would do the bull jumping ceremonies when they were in their mid to late teenage years, but it might be another, so they were officially engaged at that point, but they might not get married for another 10 years till they were able to acquire enough goats and cattle to pay the dowry to the wife's father. So it was a long process, but we got to see a bull jumping ceremony where they basically line up about 30 bulls in a row, and these teenage kids are completely naked and jumping up, no ladders to get on them. They have to run and jump on the backs and run across the backs back and forth 4 times without falling.
And if
of all the bulls?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, are they tied together or something?
They're being held by villagers.
And how many are there?
About 30 bulls.
Was it that many? Was it that many?
It was quite a few, 25, 30.
But yeah, it was still a bunch of bulls. And they're literally grabbing them by the horns
and
pulling them into position and lining them all up. And then they hold them there. And this kid runs, completely nude, runs and jumps up on the back. And he has to run back and forth 4 times. And if he falls off,
Does he start over, or is he just like too bad for you?
No, well, they do it. There is a fee that they have to pay to do this, and if they don't succeed, they have to come back and do it again. But it's not until they are able to, you know, I guess, you know, raise the money that they need to
do. Most of them make it on the first attempt?
Well, the one that we witnessed did, and I think most of them. Yeah. Do.
And there's a whole rite of passage that goes with this, with the elders painting the kids that are going to do it, and they're rubbing oil on them, and then they sit them down in this like a little secret circle.
There was so many elements to this that I don't think we would ever be able to fully understand the whole process and what everything meant. And there was a circle right before the bull actual jumping, and where it was for that purpose of blocking off the crowd so they can't see what they're doing and what they're talking about. It's a very private moment. But this was another one of those moments that was the beauty of having Rick involved, because he had discovered this. And he was like, "Oh my God, this is something we've got to see." And it's much more common than the stick fighting, but it's still not something that you just stumble across. Well, I guess we did kind of stumble across it. But.
And we were having to wade across rivers. I mean, about 3 or 4 times to get to it. And
yeah, and we were walking with the cows, with the bulls.
Yeah.
Part of the ceremony started on one side of the river. Then you had to cross the river, and there was
everybody walked together as a procession.
Everything meant something
with the bulls. Yeah.
It's not like, hey, let's just go over here and line up these bulls. You know, there was a legitimate reason for everything we did.
It was real funny. Roddy and I positioned ourselves kind of sitting in front in the position where we could see the bulls and the kid jumping over them for the photographs. And there was a group of these hammer women sitting behind us. It was under a tree, so they were in the shade.
Rick's married.
And there was a baby, and there was this young hammer woman that she wasn't a first wife, but she had on the marriage collar, so she was married. And I'd say she was what, mid-20s?
Yeah, she was young.
And she sat behind me, and every time I took a photograph, she would poke me, and she wanted to see that image behind the camera. So I let her do this for, this went on for, 30 minutes. And then she takes my hand, picks up my hand, and she dips her finger in this clay, and she paints my thumbnail with this clay. And we go back crossing the river again. Our guide didn't speak the language, so he hired a local guide to go with us, and he stayed in the car with the driver. So we get back to the car, and I told him what happened, and I showed him my thumb, and they just cracked up laughing, and they go, "You were stamped." And I go, what does that mean? He goes, "She liked you." I was flattered.
You should be.
And they loved his hair, because it's all gray.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, since this isn't a visual, our listeners, that's good information to know. Well, let's move along. If there's another tribe that we can bring into this conversation.
Well, my favorite was the Caro tribe. They I guess there's not a great story to get you hooked on this one, but
it was
just
a beautiful setting. Just
visually, I mean. They were probably the kindest. Yeah. I mean, all the tribes were really great, but we didn't have any moments, but they were so friendly and so cooperative, and they loved having their photo taken. And even to the point where, they, like I said, it's not a lot of people see this, but it's done enough to where they're comfortable with it. And it's, I guess some of them remembered photo shoots from other people, and they would, grab your arm and take you over to a spot to have their photo taken in a particular place. Mm. And you're going, "Oh, wow, thank you." Because they're remembering what other people had done, and they were making suggestions. Yeah, they were super friendly and very, very ornate and decorated. Yeah. I guess they weren't that ornate, but it was the paintings on their bodies that they did was very intricate.
And some of the women had striking features. I mean, they were beautiful.
But
it was just the setting. I mean, you were up high over this river.
It's the Omo River. Yeah. And
there was jungle on the other side, and there was like a mist over the water and low clouds. And it was just this almost like a fog coming up. That was dissipating and very surreal.
Yeah.
One of the things I've appreciated listening to the two of you is how you've given me and our listeners a visual painting of Ethiopia. And like you say, if I thought about it at all, that certainly would not have been what I would thought about beautiful valleys and beautiful rivers and beautiful
it really
scenery.
Is one of the most beautiful countries that Yeah. I think I've been to. Absolutely. Yeah, it's gorgeous over there.
So that sounds like that must have been a surprise as well, although you'd seen it in pictures and you did your research, but I imagine being there in person was really very powerful. So we could talk about this forever, and we'll definitely have to visit again. We're just really, really just on the very tip of the iceberg here. But as you reflect, and you've mentioned several specific tribes, but as you reflect about Ethiopia in particular, and from a distance, it's not even that far a distance now. It's only about 6 or 7 months. Are you aware of any ways that that particular experience and the experience with the tribes has changed you personally?
Yeah, I love doing third world. I've done quite a bit of it, and kids are the same everywhere. They want to laugh, they want to play, they want to be held and hugged, and then the elder people, I mean, they're quick to smile and quick to laugh, and you know, at the base of it, I mean, they're like everybody else. I mean, their traditions and dress and culture is certainly very, very much different. But you know, they're affectionate people, and they love their families, and it's, you know, there's lots of differences, but there's similarities with other cultures as well.
How about you, Rodney?
Yeah, it's definitely been a eye opener to see, you know, see how I think about it all the time, you know, and how, you know, what their life is like. And, you know, we're coming, you know, we come home to comfortable beds and, you know, AC and heat and, you know, whatever we need. And they're literally fighting the elements every day and, you know, struggling, you know, are they going to have, you know, what's their next meal going to be? And it really makes you realize how fortunate we are.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know, more people need to go and travel and see these things. It's like, you know, I'm looking at what we're going through right now in our society and what we're, you know, how divided we are. And if people just got out and traveled more and experienced this kind of stuff, it would change your mind. You know, it's like the stuff that I'm seeing, I'm just like, it blows my mind that what we're fighting about right now. And there's people, you know, in other parts of the world that are just trying to get a meal, and you know, we're worried about wearing a mask. You know, it's just an eye opener, and it's made me much more compassionate and understanding, and I just I want to keep learning more.
Both of you sound eager to go back. And with that, again, if we just put the bell jar over Ethiopia, what are you most eager to experience on a second trip? Rick, what would that be for you?
No, knowing what to expect, I would like to spend see more of the Suri villages than the one that we saw. Some villages are more ornate than others. I'd like to spend additional time with the Suri. The Karo tribe, I'd love to revisit them again. And like you said, do some proper portraits. We researched it. We knew what we were getting ourselves into, but once we got there and saw it,
you didn't know what you were getting yourself into.
And knowing what to expect, I would love to have the opportunity to go back and photograph them again. I've been fortunate where I got to photograph, you know, years ago, that the Dani tribes in the highlands of West Papua, and then also the people in Papua New Guinea. And although that was probably the most colorful thing I've seen, the tribes of the Omo Valley were much, much more primitive. I can't believe this still exists in this world today. It blew me away.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Rodney? What are you most eager to experience?
All of it.
Okay. Not no, helpful.
No, it's going into it, you didn't know what your interaction was going to be with him, what you were going to be allowed to do. And now that I've seen how accommodating they are and willing to do this, I want to go back. And I was fortunate enough to get to do some of it. But I want to do more formal portraits. You know, I want to do more studio type portraits.
You want to do some Rodney Brusseel studio portraits? Yeah, that would be awesome.
I want backdrops and lights, and I want my painterly portraits that I'm able to create here. And like I said, I got to do some of it because I just added a little, you know, pro photo, little A1 handheld strobe with me. So I was able to create that somewhat. But when you're there the first time, you're so overwhelmed because there's so many people that are willing to have their photos taken. You're going, you don't know where to look or where, you know, what to do. So I'd kind of like to just go back and set up a backdrop and just have them come through. It just all one at a time. But there's that. And then that our guide that we met, Miley, he was Hammer, and he hasn't gone through the bull jumping ceremony yet. And he actually, I talked to him about, you know, I said, I want to come back and do a documentary on you.
Oh, wow.
And he said, well, let me talk to my family and see, you know, if they would approve. And he came back the next day and said, yeah, they want to do it.
Well, that's something to look forward to.
We've got the access to go back and do a full documentary of this ceremony.
Oh, that'll be amazing. And let's just all hold the good faith that that day will come.
Yes,
again,
please.
Sometime. Rick, I just want to thank you again for being here with us.
And
it's been I have a sneaky feeling it won't be the last time that we talk to you.
We've got many other countries.
Yes, but particularly for this episode and the last episode, we really appreciate your sharing the pictures in your head and your heart with our listeners. So in addition to thanking Rick Minchu, and again, you have an Instagram account under that name, RickMinchew. Do you have a webpage or anything?
I do not have a webpage yet. I'm hoping to have one here in a few months.
Okay. We're all always optimistic about our webpages, aren't we? I want to be sure that Rodney and I thank Brock Glenn Thomas, who is our wonderful producer and keeps us on the straight and narrow here. We want to thank Rupert Neve Designs for our amazing studio gear and Josh Thomas. And we also want to point out that our wonderful music that starts our shows and ends our shows is music by Donovan Frankenreiter. And it's off of his CD, Start Living. So that's certainly maybe the sub-motto of our podcast here. So remember that great adventures of the mind, the body, and the spirit happen when you hear these words, Passports, Please. And until next time.